Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road later this hour. We'll have Gentry Estes from the Tennessean joining us at 8 o'clock on the program. We will get into the Titans, into the Doors, into the Vols with Gentry coming up a little bit later in the show. So looking forward to that. Brian Callahan addressing the media yesterday in his weekly Monday press conference, recapping the loss against the Rams, looking ahead to this week against the Indianapolis Colts. And, Joe, one of the topics that came up was the sack total that the Titans have allowed through two games. 6 sacks against Denver, 5 against the L.A. Rams. Obviously, you can't be letting your quarterback get sacked 5.5, 6 times a game and expect that that's going to end very well for you and your offense as you move forward here. So Brian Callahan was asked, what do you make of the total and what exactly is going wrong there? Here's what Brian Callahan had to say on that front.
11 sacks in the first two games. How much of a concern is the pass pro right now?
Yeah, I know. Again, we've been down this road, I think, before, and I don't mean to be dismissive of your question, but I think that, as I've said a million times, that sacks are an offensive problem. They're not an offensive line problem. Felt like a handful of our sacks were avoidable. You know, one of the sacks is Cam running out of the pocket and taking a 2-yard loss, you know, outside the pocket, which isn't an offensive line thing. I think a lot gets made of sacks being an offensive line stat. And while I'm not dismissing the fact that we got to play better up front, that's certainly not the case. But the sack thing is an equal parts problem. We've had 2 or 3 pressures and sacks come off of some running back protection things. It's not just them. And so, yeah, the number in and of itself is concerning. Don't like that number. Don't want to have that. That's not going to help us win any football games. But I do think there's an extra onus that gets put on our offensive line based on what's happened here before and how it's looked at. The sacks are all on them. There's 11 sacks, and oh my God, that looks terrible. I think it's a little more nuanced than that, and I think there's more things that can be done to help from, you know, quarterback perspective, from receiver perspective, from running back perspective. So it's an everybody issue that we don't just pin the blame on them. We got to be better everywhere on offense, I think, for that number to improve.
So Joe, what do you make of that answer from Brian Callahan as it relates to the sack total and the offensive line?
Like, big picture, of course, he's right that some of the sacks at the end of the year, you give up 40 sacks. You know, some of these, yep, these are on the quarterback. Some of them, the offensive line did its job. The back screwed up pass protection, so that's on the back. Some of them, the protection held up actually as well as you would hope. The coverage, there was nothing there. It's a coverage sack. But, I mean, let's be real. Anybody who's watched this team through – 2 games has seen that most of the sacks are because one or more of the offensive linemen gets completely pantsed right after the snap. So, I like nuance, yes, in general. And of course, I don't think any Chris Harris or anybody is saying it's only the offensive line. We've talked about Cam Ward has a couple of those on him, right?
Sure.
But let's be real. Again, this offensive line is bad, and sacks do still reflect an offensive line's performance more than they reflect anything else.
Yeah, like I'm looking, and again, there's a limitation to what this means. So let me be clear on the front end of that. But I'm looking at PFF right now. You know, Dan Moore has a 40.1 pass blocking grade, which is 76th in the NFL out of 92 qualifying tackles.
Is that bad?
And he's your starting left tackle. A 40.1 grade, which is 76th in the NFL right now. So, look, I'm with Brian Callahan. I can think back to the Denver game, and there's 2 sacks that are probably on Cam Ward in that game alone, right? So, he's right. The sack total itself is not just as simple as it's the offensive line cratering. But it kind of sounded like to me like he was trying to take attention off the offensive line just absolutely cratering out there. And that's – if that does not improve, they just have no chance offensively here. And obviously Latham back in there is going to be a big part of that. But I think what he said there about how much attention has been on the offensive line around here and how maybe that amplifies the discussion a little bit. It's like, well, part of why you were brought in. Yeah, like, yeah, there has been a lot of attention on the offensive line because it's been absolutely terrible. It's been the worst offensive line in the league the last couple of years. And it does not need to be that way again. And it ain't off to a good start. Like, it's got to get better. I'm sorry. At some point, it's got to get way better.
Do you have all their grades? You just have
I don't. I just got Moore's at the moment.
What did you say it was? 41?
40.1 is the pass blocking grade at the moment.
As much as I absolutely disdain PFF and the instant grades, whenever they support a narrative of mine, of course.
Yeah.
That's compelling. Dan Moore. More like Dan Moore is more like man door. Man door. Open the man door and sack my quarterback, please. I think we're going to call him man door until he blocks somebody.
I think it was Liam on the YouTube chat yesterday that called him Dan Less, which I kind of like that.
Okay. Do we like Dan Less or man door better?
I like Dan Less.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with man door. Open it up. Yeah, right to the quarterback. That's a screen door.
Low T alert.
Thank you.
Welcome in. Just say hi to Cam Ward.
Behind
Southern Hospitality.
Door number one, man door. Hey, it's a quarterback. Here's a sack.
The thing is, and I heard Callahan talk about this yesterday, and I agree. And again, look, I'm not some offensive line evaluator, nor am I some offensive line coach. So take what I have to say for a grain of salt here. I thought the interior, like, I think Skaronski's been pretty good so far. Mm-hmm. Cushenberry coming back off the Achilles injury, I think, has been pretty good so far. Zeitler, other than a few penalties that he's got to clean up, in the run game specifically, I think has been good. So, like, their problems, stop me if you've heard this one before, Joe, kind of rest at the tackle spots right now, which has been a theme around here.
That's the thing, though. Like, I think I understand that in the last few years, like, Skaronski's had his, you know, that stuff. But I actually think it would be refreshing just to see Titans quarterbacks sacked through interior pressure.
Yeah.
Like, just anything but the instant tackle lunging and flailing and, oh, God. And obviously it's been exaggerated on the right side because of the injury, and it's just I don't even know what the heck they're going to do over there. I mean, try someone else now. Try Blake Hance, I guess, right? And a lot of people thought that was going to be the case anyway. But, like, seriously, it's just – so, you know, people like Craig on the text says, if sacks on an O-line stat, what the hell is the O-line even out there for? Did it look pretty? Well, again, the point is, and it is – it's correct. There are times when the offensive line does do its job and a sack happens, and then everyone says, this offensive line allowed this many sacks. I get it. And certainly if you're an offensive lineman, if you're an offensive line coach, you hate that stuff. It's like – I'll go through the film with you right now. This quarterback ran himself into that sack, and that happens. But again, if you broke down the 11 sacks right now, I would wager that on 9 of them, and again, this doesn't even count all the pressures that didn't turn into sacks and stuff like that, right? At least somebody got beat so quickly, it just can't be deemed anything other than a completely failed rep.
You want some positive stuff on the offensive line? Peter Skaronski, his overall grade at PFF, 72.6, which is 11th in the league among guards. Pass blocking grade, 76.8, which is 12th. Run blocking grade, 72.6, which is 11th. So pretty consistently right there. Skaronski's off to a nice start.
There you go. Again, I hate to give PFF
I know, I'm doing
credit.
A lot of PFF this segment. Sorry.
This is a Johnny G. And he would love this segment. If we just throw in a little Trey Avery for this segment, it'd be his favorite segment of all time. But that does match what I feel like I've seen.
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, the problems are at tackle. I don't know what's going on in the studio next to us right now. A lot of noise happening.
I was wondering. I was like, wow, it's kind of loud.
Yeah, what the heck's going on?
I could
kind of
hear something in the background. I was checking all my computers, everything.
I thought Ian had cranked up the volume on Charmed, but – I don't know.
Season one, baby. We're starting over.
We'll take your thoughts on the Titans offensive line and Brian Callahan's comments that, hey, don't be so quick to put all the sacks on the O-line. More on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Heated debate raging on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and our YouTube chat. Do we like Mandor better for Dan Moore or Dan Less? I'm still sticking with Dan Less. I find that funny. That's what I'm going with.
You're disrespecting my nickname.
Yours is fine.
I mean, I think of the T-shirts we could do, like Mandor, and just have his face like opening toward, you know.
We did F1 comment says Mandor plays lookout for the Titans. Look out, Cam! They're coming right at you. Hey, Cam! Here they come. Sorry.
Hey, Mandor, tell us if they're coming or not. Okay, at least can you like tell us if you see anybody over there?
Snap the ball. Immediately, Cam, look out! Cam, run!
He was in a Trojan horse. I couldn't see
him. Run, Cam, run!
Yeah.
Playing quarterback for the Titans, probably been a fun experience the last few years. Oh, God, I snapped the ball and somebody's immediately in the backfield. What do I do?
Jackson has an honest question. He says, okay. Honest question. Has Bill Callahan made our O-line worse? And I responded on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I said, Skronsky has improved, right? I think Latham has improved. We haven't really been able to find out.
We'll see.
We'll see when we – yeah, we'll see. I think so. I mean, at least losing weight was good. He's like you've said, he needs to be great. But, again, the question is about Bill Callahan working with the offensive line. I mean, I think the big issue here is, again, evaluating that Nicholas Petit-Frere would be fine at right tackle. Now, was the film actually terrible? And then Callahan couldn't see that. I think some of that is the intangibles of Nicholas Petit-Frere, right? That I guess you could say, like, maybe
fantasy football expert Nicholas Petit-Frere.
Yeah, but still, I mean, they decided he can play. They decided Ojukwu can play. They had what's his name? Who was here last year? They just had so many bad tackles, and I understand it's hard. There's tackles who can play in this league are at a premium, but it just the entire operation and picking, in some cases, figuring out, yeah, I think this guy, I can do something with this guy, has been a big fail.
Yeah, I mean, look.
I don't think he's making guys worse. I mean, we don't need to be.
Has he made the offensive line worse? I mean, the offensive line was awful when he took over, so let's remember that. My biggest problem is he hasn't made it all that much better, right? Like, yeah. That's my problem. I'm not really worried about him making it worse. I don't know that he's made it worse. But there's not been anywhere near, to this point, the improvement that you're looking for when you're talking about, again, a Hall of Fame resume, right? Like Bill Callahan, universally regarded as one of the top offensive line coaches, not just now, but in the history of the game, okay? So, like, do I think he got here and forgot how to coach football? No. But there have not been enough improvements on the offensive line. And I think, to your point, the choices are a big part of that. Like, we'll see. It's a two-game start for Dan Moore, but it's rough to this point, right? Like, it's not been very good through two games. So what does that look like six, seven games into the season? Latham, that's a big part of this. Like, Latham, they took Latham seventh overall.
Well, and that's part of the choice thing.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a left tackle. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, he's not a left tackle. How do you mess that up?
Right. No, I'm totally with you. But even that, like, I could probably live with that if Latham turns into an elite right tackle. But sure. He needs to be elite. Like, you took him seventh overall. I'm sorry. Like, people, well, what if he's just pretty good? Like, no, that's not good enough. Like, he needs to be an elite right tackle in this league based on where they took him. And that's going to be part of the story as well. And we need to see that at some point this year. But, yeah, like, I feel good about Skoronski. Skoronski's gotten a lot better. But overall, the offensive line is still having some of the same issues that they had when he first got here, which is not what you want.
No. Abel in the YouTube chat says, what a twist it would be if Callie fired his dad and it saved his job. Yeah, I don't think that's I don't know about that. Omar SBP03 says, Mandor sounds like an 80s wrestler.
Mandor!
Kind of reminds me of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
That Hodor guy.
Yeah.
Hold the door.
Mark says
Mandor has arrived.
Hard to believe this year's offensive line is twice as better as last year's was ridiculously bad. Well, I don't think it is. I don't think we know that yet.
Who said that?
I don't think it's twice as good as last year's offensive line. We'll see. First off, they need to get Latham healthy. So that's another thing to watch this week is Is Latham, does he have a chance to go, and not only go Sunday, but can he, like, is the hip issue going to be behind him? Because I'm with you, Joe. Like, I hear hip for a tackle, and I think,
it's not, like, good for
this,
anybody.
Is this going to be something that just lingers all year? Because really what I don't want, and nobody's really necessarily got control over it at this point, but what I don't want is to get to the end of the year and maybe Latham tries to power through it, and it just doesn't go very well. And you to get to the end of the year, Joe, and you're like, well, Latham wasn't very good at right tackle this year, but he was hurt the whole year. So what does that mean? It's like, well, I don't want that. Like, I need Latham to be healthy, and let's get a true picture and evaluation of what he is over there at right tackle. And I hope they're able to get that this year.
Yeah, and it might be – yeah, it's – it's one of those things. Latham's great. Like, Latham is intangibly. I think he wants to be great.
Yeah.
I think he's great in the locker room. Sometimes guys like that, though, are like, it's hard to keep him off the field.
Yeah.
So that, you know, this might be a thing where you need to save him from himself and let him go as much as he can to heal it this year, so when he comes back, he can be right, you know? I mean, you can't just keep rushing back, then he gets hurt again, and I can see that being a thing. Mark says, remember that Sadiq Charles retired. MPF was always a backup. No, Sadiq Charles was the guard. He was a guard.
Yeah.
He was going to be the right guard. MPF was stated in practice, in public statement, and everything you can say. He was their choice as their starting right tackle going into last year.
Did not go well.
No.
So, and now, you know, Dan Moore, they gave a lot of money to, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday. What was your other option? If you knew in your heart of hearts you were drafting a quarterback and you were drafting Cam Ward, what was your other option to select a left tackle out there? I don't know. But they gave a whole lot of money to Dan Moore, and I remember the day they did it. I looked at your face, and you were just like, Dan Moore, huh? Oh, great. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, Steelers fans were all like, oh, good. Please take him.
And through two games, they appear to be right. Now, again, as you pointed out yesterday, it's two games. You know, it's a different position, obviously. But I remember when they had Saffold in here, and he looked awful for a few games. And then he figured it out, and the offensive line figured it out. And by the end of that year in 2019, the offensive line, other than Derrick Henry, was probably the best part of the whole football team. They were really, really good.
It was great.
So maybe after five or six games, Dan Moore looks really good over there at left tackle. I'm still leaving the door open for some improvement here, but it's a bad start.
You're leaving that door open
for Mandor.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he'll look better. But right now, Quiddy Pay is like, I really want to sack Cam Ward. Go through the Mandor, young man. Yeah.
By the way, speaking of sacks, I was not aware of this until you told me yesterday, but apparently Harold Landry has 3.5 sacks in two games for the Patriots.
10 pressures. Yeah. He has 3.5 sacks and 10 pressures. The Titans edge group has no sacks and 10 pressures, and credit Mike Herndon's tweet for that.
That's good. Good for him.
Good for him. He and
not
Vraves.
Good for the Titans.
I don't know if he's as fast as Vraves running down that sideline, though.
Harold Landry.
Probably not.
Already with 3.5 sacks on the year. A quote from a high-level quarterback in the league regarding Cam Ward that I want to get into coming up next, plus an AFC team with some devastating injury news. How screwed are they? We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up here in just a few minutes at 7:45. Joe, some strong words from Matthew Stafford on Titans quarterback Cam Ward on his weekly Let's Go show. Stafford talking about the Titans says, quote, that's a salty team. I know their record is what it is, but that's a really solid defense. A young quarterback that is super talented. Man, his first touchdown pass of his career was one to remember. That was an unbelievable play. I just tipped my cap to him on the sideline and said, that's well done, youngin. Also on Ward said, quote, I was impressed by what he was able to do out of the pocket. He made some plays with his feet, threw a couple balls in timing and rhythm down the field to some receivers that were really impressive. And then the touchdown pass was a play of its own. It almost looked a little Patrick Mahomes-ish, where you're running around back there buying all sorts of time and then throwing it to the part of the field where nobody thought you'd throw it. It was an impressive play by the kid. This is from Matthew Stafford on Cam Ward. Stafford loving what he's seeing from Cam Ward to this point.
Well, more Patrick Mahomes comparisons.
I will be totally honest with you. When Ward had the ball back there and he made that little back step and like jump cut it to the right, I was like, oh, yeah. It kind of looked like Patrick Mahomes.
It did.
Back there. And then you have to throw to go on top of it.
It did. And I know right now maybe isn't the time to talk because Patrick Mahomes is not flourishing and it's the second straight year of Kansas City kind of like, although it's not his fault that Kelsey botched a freaking touchdown pass.
It's ball,
probably wins the game. But, yeah, there are some – you can see it. You can see some – now the difference, of course, is Patrick Mahomes also just does all the little things, right? Like constantly accurate, quick, ball out, ball down. Here and there he makes those ridiculous plays. Whereas like another guy who's been compared to him, not to bring him into this, he didn't do anything, but I'm sorry. But Caleb Williams is a guy who 3-4 times a game does something, and you're like, oh, my goodness. But then the entirety of the game, one read tuck, it can't see anybody, sacked, can't run it around, should have just gotten rid of the ball, you had an open receiver, sacked, you threw it away. I mean, that's right. Like it's like great. So you can do a Patrick Mahomes highlight film with Caleb Williams, but he's like – a fraction of what he is as a quarterback right now, right?
Yeah.
But, yes, that play by Cam Ward is an absurd play.
Well, it's exactly – that's the type of play you make, and it's like, yep, number one overall right there. And, look, I'll be honest with you, I think some Titans fans specifically getting a little carried away from what they've seen from Cam Ward the first 2 weeks. I said it yesterday. I like what I've seen. I think he's been good. More than anything, he has not made catastrophic mistakes out there, which you expect might happen to a rookie quarterback in their first two games against really good defenses. So the fact that he hasn't done that, I think is pretty encouraging. I mean, we are still talking about 287 total yards, 4.7 yards an attempt, and a completion percentage of 50.8 through two games. So let's not get crazy with it.
Please let's calm down. I mean, let's go back to C.J. Stroud's rookie year. So if Cam Ward has any segment of this season that looks like that, and I understand that that was a better team, although we thought it was a bad team, but it was a better team. I think C.J. Stroud elevated the team, which is something you want to see to some extent this year too. If we're going to talk about Cam Ward, if we're really going to praise, like, okay, is there a win to be had? You know, is there an overall good performance to be had? Think about how good C.J. Stroud was. I watched that game last night. I watched them struggle to do anything. They certainly couldn't run the ball.
Yeah.
He missed throws. He made some great throws, too. He got booed. He got booed multiple times in his home stadium. It's year three for him. Now, would I take C.J. Stroud as my starting quarterback? Heck yes. But I'm just saying, you know, you see a great throw here, a great throw there. And, like, there's plenty of guys who can do that. I'll take the guy who can't make a play like that but constantly makes the right play over the guy who here and there makes the amazing play. And I'm not saying that's what Cam Ward is. I'm just saying, like, the whole that's why he was the number one pick. Yeah, but if that is why, then he's not going to work out because you need the consistent excellence to sustain being a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah. On the NFL at large front, Joe Burrow – has surgery, is going to miss at least 3 months for the Bengals with the turf toe injury that he sustained. So another situation where Burrow is injured, and for the foreseeable future, it's going to be Jake Browning as the starting quarterback for the Bengals. Couple things on this front. Number one, what does that do to Cincinnati? I'm looking at their schedule right now. Over the next few weeks, they have at Minnesota, so a battle of the backups coming up, at Denver, home against Detroit, on the road against Green Bay, and then after that you've got some, you know, Pittsburgh, Jets, Bears, Pittsburgh again, some more manageable games in there. But what sort of a blow is this to the Bengals? And, like, in general with the Bengals, you have either a defense being atrocious like it was last year and ruining an MVP-type season for Burrow, or you have Burrow getting hurt. Burrow gets hurt a lot. Like, he's getting hurt all the time out there. So what do you make of what this means for the Bengals as a whole?
I think it means they're not going to make the playoffs. It's just hard for me to project that they will. Browning did some great things coming in, and he's a good bag. He's been there for a while, so yeah, it's interesting because the Bengals, you could make the case, and I know some Bengals fans have made the case, like, you've got to go out and get someone because of the injury issues with him, like, better, you know, someone who's a little more proven. But obviously they've really worked on developing Browning. So, I mean, I think he can keep him in games, but I think that ultimately it's going to be another year of the Bengals missing the playoffs. And it's just you know, now you're looking at this window that just looks like it's being wasted, especially when you think about Trey Hendrickson taking the one-year deal, you know, this year. I mean, they got the receivers locked up, but I know a lot of Bengals fans also are like, you've done nothing to protect Burrow, and it's all your fault. I mean, they have tried. They've done things, and I think at some point you have to kind of look at the reality of it. Is Joe Burrow just a little bit too fragile? It's unfortunate. It's not like you blame him and point the finger at him. It's just a possible unfortunate reality of Joe Burrow's career is that they're not going away, and they're not decreasing in frequency. And it just seems some of these injuries he has, it's not like you even see a huge hit on the play.
Yeah, I mean, the other one, the one Sunday, I mean, yeah, he got his foot caught up, which ultimately is why he got hurt. But you look at it, and you're like, well, you see that play, you know, 7-8 times a week in the NFL, and just this happens to be the one where turf toe comes about with it. So, look, can Jake Browning keep him in the race? The good news for them is they haven't gotten off to the bad starts that they've gotten off to the last couple of years, and they're 2-0. So you got a little bit of wiggle room right now, but like 3 months from now, are they going to be still in the race in what could be? I mean, you know, in the AFC North, that Baltimore is going to be really, really good. Pittsburgh, we'll see. You know, week one, they look great. Week two, not so much. So we'll see what that looks like. Cleveland's got a good defense. So are they going to be able to hang around in the AFC while he's out? I don't know. I mean, Browning, yes, he led the comeback the other day and they won. He also threw 3 picks. So, like, what exactly is he going to be as he emerges as the starting quarterback for 3 months for this team?
Well, this is also – so these are starting to pick up around the league. So, Ryan in Florida, Bengals, Tannehill, still hasn't retired as far as I know.
I thought about that actually at one point.
Yeah.
And there's also the okay, all right, Atlanta – What do you want? What do you want for
Cousins.
Captain Kirk? Yeah. I think
Jameis.
Those two guys. I've seen some calls for Jameis. I like that too.
Honestly, you'd probably be better off just going Jake Browning than Jameis, but that's just me.
What about Tannehill? Like, would Tannehill?
I mean, this kind of fits the profile, right, of a team that if he's been waiting on a playoff type roster. I mean, if you're as a quarterback, what more could you ask for? Throwing to Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he hasn't retired yet. I guess until he actually retires, you got to leave the door open for it. But
the fact that he hasn't, doesn't that mean he is waiting for a situation like this?
You would think.
If you're the Bengals, it's been a while, obviously, since he's set foot on a football field. Also, you saw him play just a
nightmare.
Those same coaches were like, oh, thank goodness Ryan Tannehill was on the other team during this playoff game. But I don't think it's crazy.
Man, how Titans would it be for Ryan Tannehill to just totally implode against the Cincinnati Bengals, and then Tannehill comes back and just nails
Wins it all?
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
We'll see.
What if he's, like, amazing, and then Burrow's healthy in the playoff? I think I'm sticking with Tannehill.
Joe, sit down.
Sorry, Joe.
Stand aside, Joe.
You are Drew Bledsoe. He is back. Tom Brady.
We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant. Now on Robbie and Rexroad.
Coach, you look very good tonight.
Come after me! I'm a man. I'm 40.
You ever talk to your team about cheating, Jim?
Dan Moore is more like man door. Mandor.
And when I have to turn on the TV and people bring up that word and they try to casually throw the word out there like you do, but it's still the word.
I need you to fluff me for a little bit first.
For me, that's a very fulfilling moment. Borderline erotic.
Ten of cheeks, tight buns. Oh my God. My ass is burning.
White Sox. White Sox. Go, go, White Sox. Let's.
It is time for the Rex Rant. Brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours.
Woo! All right. Well, don't know how to follow that one up.
Well.
Welcome to the Mandor!
Cam, look out!
Okay, I think I see him. There's somewhere out here. Hand me my binoculars.
Oh, my God, it's Jared Verse.
Oh, nope, he's already, yep, sorry.
There he goes.
Okay, there he goes. I have to read this. Liam McLeod said, Mandor sounds like the He-Man figure that no kid wanted to get on Christmas morning in 1986. Mandor? I got Mandor and She-Ra? Come on, man. That's a good one, Liam. All right, today I get so few opportunities anymore to, like, shamelessly plug things I write in The Athletic. But today I'd like to read you a headline from my column in The Athletic, which is, Michigan State USC start time is perfect if you're a Spartans alum living in Bangkok.
Did you know Joe writes for The Athletic?
I mean, I just, every once in a while, we do need to step back. It's like, you know, with college football, sometimes we need to step back, like on Saturday, and say, whatever else you think of all this stuff, what an amazing game. Just it's just as – and that is the thing that gives me hope, is that Saturday, to me, is just as good. Game didn't feel any less intense. It was amazing. The fans were amazing. It was tremendous. Also, every once in a while, because we're so used to it, it's kind of like we get desensitized to bad offensive line play or Titans just losing all the games. Sometimes we need to step back and also remind ourselves how freaking stupid college sports is. They're playing like Michigan State is in the Eastern time zone. Their team is playing a big game on Saturday in college football. It kicks off at 11:05 p.m. Like, this is like watching Korean baseball during COVID. Oh, goody! We could just be on a different time zone and watching it. Like I said, in Bangkok, it's perfect. There are, apparently, I looked this up yesterday on the internet, there are 517 Michigan State alums living in Thailand.
Good to
know. Perfect. 11 a.m. kickoff. Awesome for you. Now, I reached out to the Big Ten yesterday to give me some answers on how this could possibly happen. They did not respond, which made me worry that they are so busy working on a spin job for Tony Petitti's new 60-team playoff.
Yeah.
Next year, playing games, 17 auto bids for the Big Ten, and it's UCLA and Nico against Rutgers for the last spot in the play-in game next week. Let's go, Tony Petitti and the Big Ten. All right. Just completely stupid. And let me tell you something. I know we always do the Big Ten-SEC comparisons. Well, the SEC doesn't have teams on the Pacific Coast, and they don't make their teams play games that start at 11 p.m. local, and they don't make USC, which is playing this game at 8 p.m. their local time, which is super late for people out there, by the way. Like, they're not used to games that late either. Then the next week, they play a game at 9 a.m. their time for the big noon kickoff at Northwestern.
Yeah.
It's complete insanity to make sure that we have all this TV content. It makes no sense for anyone who would actually want to watch the game, for the people playing the game, for the people coaching the game, for anybody else except the TV executives who think everybody is just a piece on a game board. It's unbelievable. And so let's acknowledge and give a little golf clap to the utter stupidity of college football, but in particular, the Big Ten. You are the dumbest of the dumb.
You going to stay up and watch? You going to pull an all-nighter?
Well, I know that – you know, well, first of all, I'm sure, like, you know, the kids that are actually up there, I'm sure they'll have no problem, right? But that's another thing. It's like, you think about, like, a college town and people are out at the bar at a party. Now, think about it. You're
bar
out at the
closes bar. Closes before the game starts.
The bar's going to close at the end of the third quarter. Well, that's what I wrote. I said, I think they're going to have more post-bar brawls because everybody's trying to stream their phone. Their phone's out of battery, and they're trying to get like a burrito after the bar, and then, you know, you don't even know what happened at the end of the game. I mean, look.
Meet us in the Taco Bell parking lot. We'll watch it there.
Yeah, I'm sure Katie will try. There's no way that I'm going to be up at 2:30 a.m. watching this stupid game. Katie might try. Good luck.
I mean, hey.
I doubt you're going to make it all the way.
You know, Vols fans, a few weeks ago, when UCLA, they kicked off their first game at the same time, 10 o'clock. They stayed up.
Yeah.
They did it.
That's true.
They were passionate about hate watching. Into the night.
Hate watching can be a very powerful thing. That is true. But again, that was UCLA, Utah, right?
That is correct.
UCLA, UNLV. Yeah. There is another Big Ten game. Well, there was one last year that was, what was it like? I think it was Oregon, UCLA. Okay. 8 p.m. local. Traditional Big Ten matchup between Oregon and UCLA.
Yes.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, not very good.
It really is embarrassing.
Not very good.
And it's just, again, it's in all seriousness, it is such disrespect for fans. That's what it is, right? It's like
you're
it's
just
complete,
a wallet these days.
Complete disregard for fans to make sure you have, you know, some content here, content there. That's all it is, content.
Be a
inventory.
Big win, though. When Sparty waltzes in there and they take down USC, you know, early hours of the morning.
It'd be like a tree falling in the forest. Who knew? Who knows?
Back on Monday.
USC -17.5, huh?
Woo!
That's
disrespectful. I think that's about how it's going to go, too. That's a good thing, I guess, for Michigan State fans is that you probably be able to go
just
to bed
turn
by
that
halftime.
Thing off. Just turn it off.
Not to be a hater. Just
nothing
saying.
To see here. By the way, real quickly, speaking of UCLA. You know, they fired Deshaun Foster, their coach, 3 games in.
Yes.
Which means the transfer portal is open. You know, they could Nico could get back in the portal if he wants to.
Well, I saw next 30 days. Amanda Krisovich from Front Office Sports, she had an interesting tweet because, yeah, there was all this kind of like – there was all this like, okay, so what did Nico have to do? Like, did he get paid anywhere close and all this stuff? And essentially, I mean, I think that the without anybody having an exact number. He took a pretty big pay cut. So he takes a pretty big pay cut to go out to a place with a much tougher cost of living, although I don't know if that really matters. I mean, is he in the dorm? I don't know. Yeah, so this is what Amanda Krisovich, tweeted. She said, after Nico left Tennessee, his representative told Front Office Sports they had not steered him wrong. Now he's making far less money on an 0-3 UCLA team that just fired his head coach. His representative declined to comment. Yeah, I bet they did.
They did.
Yeah. They screwed the kid over.
Get in the portal. Go be quarterback for, I don't know, Grand Valley State next year.
Hey, Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
Brian Kelly used to berate reporters at Grand Valley State about 30 years ago. But seriously, I mean, it is like if you want to hate watch Tennessee fans, why don't you hate watch his agent? You know, like find his agent on Twitter or like his dad, I think, is a coach, you know. You could probably find like some kind of a feed of like his dad's coaching. Hate watch that. They're the people that screwed him over.
Just make sure it starts before 11 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah. Let's see. Probably high school football, it's probably be about 9 p.m. Central. If you're in the mid-state, you're fine.
Oh, yeah.
10 p.m. Eastern is fine. Again, even like a 10 p.m. Eastern start time, to me, it happens.
Late.
But 11 p.m. It's past like 11:10 p.m. kickoff time.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Gentry Estes from the Tennessean will join us coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.